Now, here's your host, Mark Moses.
Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome indeed to, yes, hour number two of the Mark Moses Show. And we got to get this fine gentleman on the phone because it appears, he messaged me this morning saying that last night the wrestling pay-per-view he went to was, quote, best live show I've seen, end quote, there in North Carolina. He is my good friend Chris Graham with the Augusta Free Press. Chris, how you doing today?
Doing great. I was up late last night. AEW shows go to midnight, but it was a great show. Great time up there in Greensboro.
You went there because it was allegedly Sting, the Stinger. It was his final match of all time. Did it live up to the expectations for you as a gigantic wrestling fan?
Yeah, it actually probably surpassed. Because, you know, you go into a match, an event, where it's billed as a guy's retirement match. And, you know, Sting is one of the legends of the business. And who knows how many more of these type guys retiring will get this kind of attention anytime soon anyway. And so there's a lot of expectations going into a match like that. And, you know, they probably surpassed it. I mean, it wasn't a traditional Sting match. He's 64 years old, so he's not going to wrestle a bunch of holds and maneuvers and stuff like that. It was a tornado match, tag team, all four guys in the ring kind of thing. Lots of tables and chairs and ladders and glass and things of that nature. But man, they put a show on. It wasn't a great wrestling match. It was great sports entertainment, though.
All right, I have a question. I thought your retirement match, you're supposed to lose, but it didn't. He won. That's not what I thought. That's the rule, that you lose your final match.
Yeah, you're supposed to lose and put somebody over, and put the next generation over. But you know the way this was done, and that was certainly a thought on the part of a lot of people in the crowd. The event sold out pretty much within hours of it being announced back in December. Sting was a star. He first became a star in the old Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling territory, which was based in the Carolinas and Virginia. Greensboro was the heart and soul of that territory. And so, you know, putting Sting in his retirement match right there in the middle of where he came up in wrestling, great idea. It worked great from a business standpoint. The Young Bucks inserted themselves into it. There's no tie between Sting and the Young Bucks. People were wondering, what are they doing? You know, these guys were behind the scenes. Are they trying to maneuver their way into a win? Then AEW booked it so that Darby Allin and Sting, the tag team, won the AEW tag team title. So all of a sudden, it's very clear if you're a traditional fan at all, man, they won the titles. That means they're going to lose the titles. And, I don't know that the crowd last night would have gone for that. If they're just reading the room, which the plan going in had to be, this thing was going to win. But if they were reading the room at all, they would have called an audible and said, you know what? This building might burn down if Sting loses this match. We have to have him win this match.
Was that his final match?
That's his final match, yeah. You know, I mentioned he's 64 years old. Now, I say this, he wrestled like a guy in his 40s. He took one bump through a table from the ring to the floor. He took another bump from a ladder through a table. He no-sold it, got right up, double clotheslined both of the Young Bucks. Then afterwards, about 5 minutes later, he took he got Irish whipped into a plate of glass and went through it. I mean, so he still got it. You know, the crowd loved chanting, you still got it. But, you know, he's 64 years old, and at some point you got to hang it up.
No. No.
I think he's done.
No, I don't think he's done. You know why? Because the man in his corner was Ric Flair, who's 75. And I saw the highlights where he's getting punched in the face. I thought he retired 3 years ago. What's going on here?
Oh, well, now, that, you know, Sting could come back, quote unquote, in a talking role. But that said, Sting was never much of a talker.
No.
You know, there's a role for a guy like Ric Flair who can, you know, talk anybody into a building. Sting was more about, you know, just the aura, you know. And of course, when he was younger and was at the top of the game as a wrestler, he was so exciting and in a lot of ways changed the game. Big muscle guy who could move. It used to be you were either a small guy who could move or you were a big muscle guy, not both. But no, I don't know that he's someone who's going to be compelling enough to be a manager or anything like that. I really think he's done.
I see a lot of posts today where a lot of guys our age are like, man, I grew up with Sting. He was my favorite. He was never my favorite. I respect him. I think he's awesome. He's an all-timer. But I don't get emotionally invested in Sting like other guys do. How about you, Chris?
I don't know that I'm emotionally invested, no. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, I grew up in the Mid-Atlantic territory. I grew up in Virginia, so, you know, watching these guys every week and seeing the young Sting and everything he did, he was very different than the other wrestlers of that time in the mid-'80s and in the territory days. You know, at the time he was bleach blonde, he was a surfer dude, and literally from California, big muscle guy, tan, everything else, and you know, grew over the years, you know, evolved over the years. He ended up taking on that persona, the Crow persona, you know, and the dark side of Sting and everything else. So I'll give him credit for evolving. You know, there's a very Madonna-like quality there. You know, he didn't stay one thing. He evolved over the years. But no, from that investment standpoint, no. But then, I mean, I guess I'm a guy who drove 3 hours to see his last match because I had the opportunity to do so in person. So I must have been invested a little bit.
Where were you guys sitting at?
We were, let's see, lower level near one side of the state of the entrance ramp stage. And so for that last match, there was a spot where one of the Bucks and Sting were sort of, you know, fist fighting there on that side of the stage. They were 20 feet from us. It was really cool. And then Sting got suplexed into it off that platform onto a table on the floor. And off camera, I'm sure. Of course, I wasn't watching on TV, but I'm sure it was off camera. Sting, he sold it off camera. He like laid there writhing in pain. He probably was hurting, but given that he no-sold some things later, I'm thinking, you know, it was definitely a sell. But he was there for like 5 minutes crawling, and he'd crawl for a few feet and he'd, you know, kind of collapse. And he was doing that off camera just for the relative few fans who were there, and people were chanting for Sting. Come on, Sting, get up there, Sting, you know. So really cool. But yeah, we had really, really good seats for the show.
We're with Chris Graham, August Free Press. Why were there other things on the card? Other matches?
And you know, the way a pro wrestling pay-per-view goes these days, you know, the show started at 7 with the quote-unquote pre-show. Oh. The live show started at 8. You know, this match, I think they started the ring entrances around 11:10. So it was a long night. But there's, you know, I will say this, AEW had been disappointing me for the last few months. You know, they lost CM Punk last fall. You know, it seems like they've been going in circles a bit. MJF getting injured, their former world champion, he's been out for a while now. And so, you know, going into the show, I was, okay, I'm going to the live show. I hope it's a good live show because I've not really been impressed with TV. They put on a great live show last night, and it all made a lot of sense. They didn't do things that they had been doing wrong. You know, too many spots of one nature. The only match of the whole night, there were 11 matches on the card. The only match of the whole night that had anything in terms of furniture, as we like to say in wrestling, any tables or any chairs or anything like, was the last match. They didn't overdo that kind of stuff. They had other really good wrestling matches. Will Ospreay, who's a huge free agent signing from New Japan Pro Wrestling, debuted, put on a barn burner of a match with a Japanese guy, Konosuke Takeshita. That would have been the match tonight if not for this, obviously, with Sting's retirement show. Samoa Joe defended his world title in a three-way match and surprisingly won. There were other good matches on the show, but it was kind of just, all just prelude to getting us to Sting.
Yeah, you're there for Sting. Who are you kidding? You want Sting, you got Sting. What was it like when his intro music hit?
Well, they did a really neat thing, as his intro music was hitting. They did two neat things, actually. They worked really hard to get as much footage as they could. And, of course, he WCW and NWA's footage was purchased by WWE when WWE bought that company out of basically bankruptcy in 2001. So they couldn't really access that footage, but they pieced together what they could. They did a three-minute tribute video with Sting, you know, his catchphrase being "It's Showtime." They had him as if he was kind of watching his career highlights in a movie theater. It went on for quite a while, lots of tributes from guys on that package. Then his music hits, and they brought out two guys, and I'll tell you in a second who they were, but they brought out two guys. One was dressed up as the original Sting, if we want to say, the mid-80s surfer dude Sting. And then the second guy was the NWO Sting. As it turned out, they were his two sons, who are big boys themselves, let's just say. And they came to the ring with their dad and with Darby Allin, his tag team partner. They even got involved at the very beginning of the match. The two kids were doing Stinger splashes. The kid dressed as the original Sting was wearing Sting's tights from the 80s. The other son was dressed in the NWO gear from the mid-90s. And that was really cool, you know, to see those guys, honoring their dad and being given an opportunity. It was really cool the way they did all that stuff.
Your wife needs to win Humanitarian of the Year award for going to you.
Let me tell you, no, she didn't. She was able to beg out of this. I've got a friend down in Greensboro, used to live here in Virginia near us, and he's a big wrestling fan himself. They just moved there. He and his wife just moved there about 6 months ago. And so first thing I did when I heard this, card was in Greensboro, hey, dude, we got to go to the show. So we actually, he and I went to the show, and the two wives stayed behind. So Crystal for a night did not have to. But she asked me to text her because she watches enough of this. She wanted to know who was winning at least. But she asked me not to send her any pictures of blood. So I tried not to do that. I think I might have failed on that point.
Last night, I'm seeing things on Twitter where it's like, you could order the pay-per-view, Sting's about to come out. I'm like, no. If you didn't buy it by now, you're not going to, just drop $70 to watch it.
I think that they were thinking, though, hey, the other stuff, kind of like you said earlier, what are they doing other matches for? No, there were the four seats beside us, and again, we had really good seats. The four seats beside us were empty until about 9 o'clock or so, right? So we scooted down, hey, we're going to get a little closer to the ring here. These people, for some reason, they bought these great tickets and didn't come. They got there about 9:15, maybe it was.
They were
timing themselves out, man. Hey, we'll go have a good time, go have some dinner, get there. We'll still see the Stinger out there.
I like it. I don't think it's his final match, okay? But here's what I'm going to tell you about Sting. When I think of the Stinger, there are a couple moments in my life. First off, in the 90s, I think there was a Sprite commercial where, you know what I'm going to talk about. You know this one, where the parents are like, hey, they tell their son, we know you like wrestling, so we got you something special. And Sting shows up in the front and starts beating the hell out of the little kid in the living room. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do remember that. Yes, yes.
I always love that commercial. The NWO got big, but one man decided he's not going to join the NWO. And I swear, we play this game at work, Chris Graham, who was not in the NWO. And the first person I say is Ric Flair, and then I say Sting. Is this correct in this?
That's probably the only two guys who won, and Diamond Dallas Page will be the other one.
That's true.
That's the three, I think, that at one point or another were not in the NWO. But no, and they played that out so well because and that was the early days of the internet. There weren't really wrestling blogs like there are today that could ruin surprises for us. And so when he sat out for that year, what is going on? It was 14 months. They milked this, him sitting in the rafters looking sad, because people were wondering, is he going to join the NWO? And he'd fly down every once in a while. And then he finally turned it down. I mean, that's commitment to a gimmick right there. And, they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, he was in the rafters. And, oh, my God, it's Sting. He's up in the rafters. It's so great. And then Tony Schiavone, was he on the microphone? No. See, he was doing the broadcast last night, so you didn't hear him say it, right? Where he said, it's Sting?
He actually, so they did the thing at the end. The match probably ended. I wasn't paying attention to time, but it was probably about 7 minutes before midnight. So, they have to stop the live broadcast at midnight for the pay-per-view. But Sting, of course, they gave him a mic, and he was thanking everybody in the world. And Tony did do one more for the live crowd. He did one more, it's Sting. That was nice. They had Jim Ross on the call, too. Of course, I wasn't watching it, but I know they had Jim Ross on the call, which was significant because the match that put Sting over was in the Greensboro Coliseum, Clash of the Champions 1, 1988, Sting versus Ric Flair, 45-minute draw on national TV, TBS. And that put Clash of the Champions over, and it put Sting over. That elevated him to the next level and is why, you know, all these many years later, we're talking about a retirement match for that guy. So they had the two original guys who were on the call. They had Sting there. They had Ric Flair there. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat was the timekeeper for last night. They brought out all the stars.
All right, when I retire from radio or whatever this will be in a couple years when we're all broadcasting on TikTok, I think my final broadcast is you super kick me for the 1, 2, 3, and then I end my career. Will you do that for me?
On TikTok, it's got to be quick, so you know, because we don't want to lose people's attention. But I think I can arrange for that. Yeah.
You know what I don't like? Everyone super kicks now. Every person. Why did we let this happen? I don't understand. Oh,
we were discussing that at the show last night. Not only, you know, when I was growing up, I remember my grandfather who I became a fan of wrestling with. He would watch the matches with me in the 80s and tell me, I remember back when I was a kid and suplexes used to knock you out. And now the suplexes just are setup moves. And, you know, so yeah, everything's a setup move. Now, pile drivers used to be, they would say it's illegal in this state to do a pile driver. And now pile drivers get a one count. So yeah, super kicks used to be, so, you know, they were lethal. Now they're setup moves. You know, what are we going to do now to put people away? I don't know.
All right, here's the story I wanted to tell you, Chris Graham of the Gus Free Press. So when I was at the WWE Performance Center, there was this weird moment. So I end the show, and then I'm in line with all the wrestlers to get food for the night. So I'm telling, end at 6. It's like about 6:15. I'm packing up. Then I'm talking to some PR people. Then there's like in the writer's room, there's a gigantic buffet style of food. So I'm sitting there in line with all these wrestling superstars eating it. This guy walks right by me, and it was so quick. I'm eating chicken, and I was taller than him, and it weirded me out. I was like, that guy looks familiar. It was Shawn Michaels, and it was bizarre. It was one of the most bizarre moments of my life because I've met a lot of famous people, but that guy invented the super kick, all right? Like, that was his finisher. He is so famous. Shawn Michaels, I wish you were with me, Chris, in that moment.
Well, you know, I did a show back when I was in my wrestling promoting days, and it's so weird for me to even think that I did that for all those years.
Yeah.
It was over a decade ago, but Shawn Michaels, we did an autograph signing show with him. And so, I mean, we flew him in from Texas and put him up in a hotel room the night before, had dinner with him. I mean, yeah, Shawn was a very down-to-earth guy. And, you know, at that time, he was just out of wrestling. Like, and he maybe came back for a match or two after. I'm sure he did. But, you know, he was just beginning, you know, starting his quote-unquote retirement. Of course, he's been back in NXT as a behind-the-scenes guy for a few years now. But such a humble guy. It was great just, you know, asking him every question. Man, what did you know about the Montreal Screwjob? I mean, you know, everything else you could think of. You know, just a regular guy who happened to make it really big. Yeah, it was so that experience with you, that is pretty cool.
It's bizarre. Like when you're there, I'm not allowed to talk about anyone that I see when I'm live on the air because you don't want to ruin it for that show that night. So what was it? Gallows and Anderson? Is that the name of that tag team?
Yeah.
So I said hi to them and they walked by and then, Brian Pillman's son, what's his name now? The King or something?
Lexus King.
Lexus King, he's there. And then the weirdest is that Chauncey, what's her name? She shows up in the tank. So literally, I saw her for a minute. Then it's a surprise she comes out that night. I'm telling you, because the last time I was there, Finn Balor walks by me. I said hello to him. I was not allowed to say a word during my live show. And Finn Balor is like super famous. And then Rhea Ripley, is that her name? Yeah.
Rhea Ripley.
I always say it wrong. I know. It's a good thing I'm a broadcaster where I butcher people's names. So it's like her. It's like the weirdest thing. You can't talk when I'm on the air and they're all walking by me. I think John Cena was there last week.
And you're bursting. You want to say something, but you can't.
No, you can't.
You know. You mentioned Luke Gallows, Dot Gallows. He worked one of the shows that I was part of, local shows. He was in between stints in WWE. Another nice guy, also a big fellow, as I recall, like 6'8" or 6'9" or so, big mountain of a man.
All right. So when I got there, I park my car and this black Range Rover SUV, tinted windows, parks right by me at the same time, okay? And I get out and I see this woman and it was Charlotte Flair. And we just like, hey, so weird. Okay? Yeah. Like, but you would have liked this. So the security's like, I pull up and security guard's like, oh, you're Mark, right? Yeah, we got a space for you. Don't worry about it. So me and Charlotte Flair, private parking at the WWE Performance
Center. I mean, you have made it at this point when you're in the same breath as Charlotte, same breath and same parking lot as Charlotte Flair.
That's yeah. right. And Tiffany Stratton, she parked right by us as well. And I knew when I saw Tiffany Stratton at house shows here in Melbourne, you could just tell. Like, she's got the it factor. And it's funny, they brought up the SmackDown in the last 2 weeks, and you could see where the crowd's starting to cheer for her. Like, hey, she's athletic, she's got a good look, and she's got a kind of a heel personality. I think she's going to be champ in another year. That's my pick.
Well, and that's the cool thing about, seeing the people at the developmental level. Back when I was working in the business, yeah. We had a mix of, we would book shows with the legends who would help sell the tickets, but then the people who did the real work were the up and comers. I mean, they would entertain the crowd, and the other people got them in the building, and it was always fun to like, hey, I'm kind of guessing who's going to be the star here, and you can see it sometimes, and sometimes you can say, well, they're good, but maybe there's not enough there, either mic work or ring work or whatever else, but yeah, you having that opportunity in NXT. It reminds me of when I was watching NXT back when it was still just on the internet, and it felt like a little cult, I would almost tell people, hey, you can't wait till you see these guys in 6 months, and like, how do you know these things? Well, because, man, I'm an NXT fan, so
they show there's like that documentary. We're here at Chris Graham, Augusta Free Press, here on a Monday. They show you like, I'm trying to think, this might have been early 2000s, where it's that Ohio Valley wrestling.
Yes.
Where,
yes.
Like, dude, at one point, it was John Cena, Brock Lesnar, Batista, and Randy Orton were all there before they got big.
A little hole-in-a-wall building in Louisville, Kentucky. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you knew, with Brock Lesnar, you knew right away. Like, just, this guy's going to figure it out.
Scary thing with him was he was the NCAA champion wrestler. He also he's softened up over the years. I mean, he's still Brock Lesnar, but in the early 2000s when he was in his early to mid 20s, that dude was jacked.
Yes.
So he was not only like rippling muscles who could do shooting star moonsaults. But he was a great wrestler who then became the UFC champion when he decided to go for real. And man, oh man. And Jim Cornette was the guy who was in charge of Ohio Valley Wrestling's like training school. For 3 or 4 years, his training school was those guys. Can you imagine what that was like every day?
Hey, remember, this is the part you left out. He becomes the champion in WWE, then leaves to try out for the Minnesota Vikings as well. Okay, then he's not good enough to play NFL football. Did he play college football? I still get confused.
He did not. No, he was a wrestler, yeah.
So he tries out for the Minnesota Vikings. He can't cut it because I don't even know if he played peewee football. Then he goes to UFC. It's like, I always remember when they're like, what are you talking about, Minnesota Vikings? Like, what? And I always remember that story. It's just wild.
Well, because for me, I'm thinking, man, if I could find a guy who can wrestle like that, no one could. I can't imagine if someone had just decided, we're going to put him. If he would have accepted it, he probably, there's no way he would have accepted it. But put him on a practice squad, let him work on technique for a few weeks.
Yeah,
who could block that guy?
The only guy I'm trying to think who actually played in the NFL, I think it's Bill Goldberg, where he played for like a season or so, and then went to.
He did. He was a star at Georgia, played for the Falcons, and then,
because not many of them, and it's a whole other world. I'll just say this before I let you go. I the Rock thing with the Bloodline, what happened Friday night, I don't know if you saw it. I know they kept going to black, and they're bleeping because the crowd's swearing, and then they're swearing, and that, dude, we've talked about this. It's 2 weeks in a row. Man, Roman Reigns told The Rock to acknowledge him, and he did. Those promos are fantastic. And that's some of the best stuff WWE's done in years. How about you?
They're doing a great build-up for WrestleMania. This is going to break all records when WrestleMania rolls around without question. And, you know, and we talked about this last time we talked. I mean, the original plan was for Rock to wrestle Roman Reigns. I think it's, I mean, they backed their way into this, but it's going to be better this way because of just the interplay between those two on these weekly segments. Oh, my God.
Oh.
You know, and they, what they did in Utah, I mean, this is going to be a traveling circus for the next few weeks. The only question we've got is, can Peacock handle all the demand? That's the big question.
That is a good question. I think it's must-see TV. A Friday night, it was awesome. It really was. And The Rock, he had to acknowledge Roman Reigns. I never thought I'd see The Rock actually show up and then, like, help the business. I think since Vince McMahon, that whole debacle, I think he's really had to step up and help the business. And it's really cool to see.
And he's playing the – I mean, so the guy who famously said, know your role, he knows his role. I mean, his role is, okay, I'm going to be a supporting player here. I want to chalk it up. But what a great supporting player to have. And it also, it doesn't make him get in a match. We're heading towards a tag team match, as we talked about last time on the Saturday night of WrestleMania. But a tag team match, he's not going to tax himself to that. He'll do a few moves. He's not going to get hurt in that. But his best quality at his age of 51 now is to talk. He'll talk people into that building.
All right, we just went 25 minutes on wrestling. Okay, so I think you have to come back in 2 weeks, and then we'll do our brackets. Okay, let's do that.
I'll be ready for you.
Chris Graham, Gus Free Press, thanks for your help, and have a great day.
Thanks, man.